LinkedIn News.
It can be very misleading, this question of what do you want, because it assumes in the question itself that you aren't satisfied or gratified with where you are. When I ask, what do you really, really want? It is not Ferraris or the badass title or a vacation home in Aspen. It is, I want to be seen. I want to stop being overlooked and underestimated. I want inner peace. I want mad love. And it's okay to want these things. In the creative world that I work in, tension is where the juice is. Comfort does not breed creativity. And comfort is a cornerstone of privilege. Comfort gets us nowhere. But creativity is born of tension and agitation. And so wanting, desire, is the heart of that agitation that propels us forward. Now, do we want the things that we think we want? Or is there a deeper level of want? What is underneath the external titles? There's always something deeper. And we don't need to shame ourselves for wanting, because wanting propels us forward.
So that's Bonnie Wan. I'm Leah Smart, and this is Everyday Better. Make sure you hit that follow button to get new episodes of our podcast every week. Our conversation starts in just a few moments.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hey, everyone. From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, and this is Everyday Better, a self-improvement podcast where every week I sit down with some of the world's brightest minds and bravest hearts to learn how we can improve ourselves, our relationship to others, and the world around us. If you're not subscribed to my newsletter, make sure you sign up. You'll get weekly research-backed practices for elevating your mindset and living more meaningfully right into your inbox. Go to linkedin.com/everydaybetter. That's linkedin.com/everydaybetter. I would be honored to jump into your inbox and share strategies for choosing to be a little bit better every day. It's Women's History Month, so we're featuring exceptional women who are introducing new ways of thinking. This is Women Making Waves. Bonnie Wan and I sat down in the studio together to talk about her book, The Life Brief, a playbook for no regrets living. She says it's her job to help people answer these two simple but essential and often ignored questions. What do I want, and how do I want to be on the way there? Now, as a coach to others and someone who also has coaches most of the time, I can tell you the question, what do I want, is one of the most powerful. It's one of those questions that if you let it, it will take you to a vision that really resonates in a specific area of your life. So consider an area right now where you'd like to see an improvement. It could be your work life, as in your sense of purpose, your day-to-day job, or your overall contribution to your company, your emotional world. Maybe you want to feel more positive emotions, more gratitude, or develop a stronger mindset, or your physical health. Maybe you want to get into better shape, get more sleep, stop beating yourself up about not being in shape, or have more energy. Whatever it is, pick it and ask yourself this question. What do I want when it comes to that thing? Not what do my colleagues want, my friends, my partner, my kids, my parents, or society want, but what do I want? Now, most of us, I find, can't break past the limits of our own minds here. We get stuck. It can feel hard and scary to admit what we really want, but just try it. If that idea, that thing that popped into your head that you want, gave you a rush of energy, a feeling of excitement, or had some magnetism, I'm going to encourage you not to run off and set a bunch of goals around it yet. You need a brief for it, a clear vision that acts as a guide for what you want and how you want to show up, or who you want to become on the way there, versus a set of goals and things to do. It starts by getting messy, then getting clear and distilling your idea down to a short sentence, and finally, getting active. Here's Bonnie.
So the life brief, it's a tool for getting clear so that you can unlock the power within and align that with all the choices and decisions you make and the actions you take.
How do we do this?
So let's back up for a second. As a career brand strategist, the tool that is at the center of what I use and what all strategists use in the creative world is called a creative brief. So it is a highly distilled, single-minded, single-page document, right? Usually when we study categories and we study companies within those categories, there's a lot of data. There's a lot of research. We talk to a lot of people. But what we're looking for is, where is the meaning? Where is the essence? If we could distill all that noise and get to the essence and break it down into a single idea that is so easy to understand and so memorable. So I call it sharp and sticky. So memorable that it's always on the leader's mind. It's on every employee's mind. It's on every partner's mind and even the audience that they're trying to reach, right? When we have that shared sense of what a company or a brand stands for, then we can create and innovate all kinds of things from that place. But when we're muddy, when we're unclear, we just become wallpaper. No one knows why to choose us. And it's the same when it comes to people. So the life brief is a creative brief for your life, but it's not one brief. You can creative brief any part of your life. And I say any relationship in your life, because every part of our lives is a relationship, whether it be the traditional kind of relationship we think about, you know, with a significant other or our parents or our children or our siblings or our friends. And then there's our relationship with work, whether that's your vocation or your career or your side hustle or joy hustle, as I like to call it. Or really importantly, our relationship with ourselves, how we nourish and nurture ourselves, how we feed and fuel ourselves. And then, of course, our relationship with our communities or the causes that wake us up in the middle of the night that we deeply care about, but we don't know how to invest in or participate in. All of these are relationships, and you can write a creative brief or a life brief for any one of them.
And you do this every year, right? You do this with your family on New Year's?
My husband and I do it the night of New Year's Day. So we do have an annual ritual. I also life brief every time I feel foggy or in a confusion or at a crossroads for my relationship with money, too. I have a wealth brief and definitely for myself. And right now, I think a lot of people, especially women, really are craving a clear sense of what they want in their relationship with themselves.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of coaching. We use often in coaching something called the wheel of life. And so we take that and people go, okay, I'm looking at every area that typically tends to matter. There are different topics on different wheels of life, but typically you find money, relationships, family, work, etc. And what people do is they go through the wheel of life and they rate on a scale from 0 to 10 how satisfied they are in each of those areas today. And when I'm working with someone, I say, okay, so then what would it take for you to get to where you want to be?
That's exactly it.
Right. And you said, what do you want? When you look at this wheel, what is it going to take for you to feel like, okay, I'm satisfied? Knowing again that life changes, it's never going to be perfect, but we can always strive for, you know, what it is we're looking to create. And oftentimes when you go through that process, it's really easy to get fixated on the things that have to happen to you in
the
order
how.
For you to go from a 5 to a 7 when it comes to your career, instead of what I think is the magic sauce, is how do you take yourself from a 5 to a 7 in relationship to your career, and then results follow or shifts follow? And I think a lot of people get like, I've got to get that. I've got to make that thing happen. If I get a raise, if I get a promotion, if I meet someone, then I'll move from 5 to 7. And we all know you get there and then you're back at a 5 within a few minutes if that's all you're reliant on.
It's okay if people need to start with the outer things, right? And spoiler alert, there's 2 driving questions in the book. The first one is exactly what you said. What do you want? It's an easy way in for people because it's a familiar question, but it's daunting because the way I ask it is not what do you feel like or what do your parents want for you, because those are typically the first answers, or what do you think you want? It's in your heart of hearts. What do you want? Even if you haven't allowed yourself to admit it to yourself yet. But the second driving question is, how do you want? And it's not, how do you want to get what you want? Mm-hmm. It's, how do you want to show up in this relationship that matters? How do you want to serve it? How do you want to shift from how you've been showing up today? And that takes a turn inward, because that's about accountability. And now we're talking about, what do you bring to this role, this relationship, that has an effect on the ripples and outcomes? And that's a really interesting question for people to chew on, because it takes us out of, I want the corner office, I want that title, mm-hmm. I want to be on this list, to, wait a second, yeah, how am I showing up? And what is the from to shift that I'm trying to make? And what happens when I allow myself to make that shift? And that's where we see the unfolding. How I've seen it happen in my life is, when I shift how I show up in the world, it becomes an invitation for everyone around me to shift how they show up and interact with me.
What do you mean by that?
I say that the life brief saved my marriage not once, but twice. Mm. So the second time, he had asked me a really terrifying question. Are you still madly in love with me? And what jumped up out of my chest and just to the tip of my tongue, and I was smart enough not to let it out, was no. 17 years, 4 kids, 3 or 4 moves later, no. But I deflected. I'm very good at that. You know, in business, you have to be on your toes. So I said, what do you mean, mad love? What? That's a teenage thing. You mean puppy love? That doesn't happen to people who've been married this long, et cetera, et cetera. But that question stuck. It sunk in and stirred and haunted me. And I had to get to the bottom of, do I want mad love with my husband, even though I don't believe it's possible? And I won't go through that, all the details around that. But eventually I did. I said yes, and I wrote it in my brief. And that was the boldest brief I ever wrote, because I absolutely, in every cell of my body, believed there was no way to recapture that feeling. But I thought I'd die inside if I didn't experience that feeling ever again. But the first act coming out of writing that brief was so simple. We had a routine where he would hand me a beautifully crafted cup of coffee as I flew out the kitchen door with our third child in tow. And I was already usually on a phone call. I just grabbed the coffee and leave. But after writing that life brief, I stopped. I looked him in the eyes and I said, thank you. And I leaned in for a kiss. And the shock on his face, it's still tattooed in my brain. The shock on my child's face, she just sensed something was different. Mm-hmm. And I got in the car and I thought, wow, that's just so simple. And I decided I'm going to do that every morning. And so I did that every morning. It took 5 seconds. And then he started showing up differently too. He held my hand in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Who holds hands shopping? But he held my hand. I was working late in bed one night. He leaned over, and that dance just started a snowball effect. It turned the corner, but it started with such a simple act of appreciation.
You know, what's funny is, like you say, it's so small, but I do think with some of our most intimate or close relationships, it's those small acts of bravery that can change everything. Like, wait a second, we just opened up a possibility that wasn't here an hour ago, 10 minutes ago. And then you offer that. And then all most people can do is, when it's modeled and offered, is then return it. And then it becomes this reciprocal thing. It reminds me of a quote that's, only what we are not giving can be lacking in any relationship. And when I first heard that, I went, oh, man, it's talking about accountability. Here we are.
That is so deep. That is exactly it. I was withholding. Yes, he was too. But when I initiated and unlocked that gate, it was an invitation to him. It gave him permission to lean in too. And 3 weeks later, we were in the redwoods. We renewed our vows back where we had gotten married. And he said, you know, we just have to remember, this is always available to us. We just have to want it.
Oof. So, okay, I want to take this question that turned into the boldest life brief you've ever written. As a coach and as someone who was drawn to this field because I so believe in possibility, I so believe in dreaming. I so believe in the idea that if we're trying to dream from what we've experienced, we're likely to live a pretty small life. You talk about that in a similar sense. When I think about a life brief, or I think about creating, oftentimes it has been this big thing. Well, you got to want the big thing. You got to want the crazy career move or the relocating across the world or the making the leap. And the more that I live and the more that I understand the importance of some of the small things, I realize that what we want oftentimes are just these small things that have a huge impact. When you work with people who create their life briefs and as you've created yours, what have you learned about the importance of sort of settling into the life that you have in a deeper way than trying to rewrite a new one?
Yeah, it can be very misleading, this question of what do you want, because it assumes in the question itself that you aren't satisfied or gratified with where you are. And so my aunt is a good example. She wrote me a novel of an email about how she doesn't want. She doesn't have any wants. She doesn't believe in wanting.
How can you write a novel of an email about how you don't want?
Yeah, she really, I think, wanted me to hear that that question was inappropriate. To ask all these people, what do they want? People should be satisfied with what they have. But then towards the end of the email, it was, I want my daughter to thrive. There were wants in there. And what I find is when I ask, what do you really, really want? It is not Ferraris or the badass title or a vacation home in Aspen. It is, I want to be seen. I want to stop being overlooked and underestimated. I want inner peace. I want mad love. And it's okay to want these things. In the creative world that I work in, tension is where the juice is, right? Comfort does not breed creativity. And comfort is a cornerstone of privilege. Comfort gets us nowhere. But creativity is born of tension and agitation. And so wanting, desire, is the heart of that agitation that propels us forward. Mm-hmm. Now, do we want the things that we think we want? Or is there a deeper level of want? Does the Ferrari actually reveal that we want to be respected, that we want to be seen as someone who has strength and confidence in the world? What's underneath the material want? Mm-hmm. What is underneath the external titles? There's always something deeper. And we don't need to shame ourselves for wanting, because wanting propels us forward. But we need to acknowledge what we really want, not what society has deemed that we should want.
We're taking a quick break, and we'll be right back with Bonnie Wan. While we're away, think about what the clearest version of your brief is. What's a concise, resonant way to say what it is you want?
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
And we're back with Bonnie Wan. The respect piece is really interesting to me because I think we want to be seen. You said we don't want to be undermined. We want to be valued. We want to be respected. Yesterday, funny enough, I was talking to a close friend. Her focus is communications coaching. And we were talking about this improv exercise that is pretty simple. Imagining that you walk into a room and you are the least important person in the room. It's a zero. You walk in and everybody around you is more important. And the whole purpose is to notice what happens to you. What happens to your body? How much space do you take up or do you not take up? And then doing the same exercise along that sliding scale. When you're at a 10, what does that look like? You know, who are you? How does your gait change? How does how long you hold eye gaze change? I mean, all of those things. And I'd never heard of this exercise before. And so this morning on the train, I tried it. It was really hard. And I just noticed my shoulders went really small.
Yeah.
And my body went really small. I was standing up and it was uncomfortable. I couldn't hold it for very long. And then I imagined, I'm not the most important person, but I feel pretty good. It reminds me of the conversation of what I think all of us are looking for. It's not that I need to have the most important job or the most expensive clothes or the best house or any of these things. It's that I need to feel inside like I am my own version of me opening up. Really, at a 9, I'm happy. You know, if I'm walking around like a 9, I'm in good shape. But me opening up and accepting that means, like you mentioned before, I invite other people to show up in whatever their 9 is. And that for me felt like the goal.
I want to get back to that really powerful exercise. And I see this in the corporate world. Equity is really important to me as a value, especially as a woman, as a non-white woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it, and it's not so much importance, it's safety to me. And we can have 9 candidates of color and 1 white candidate, and everyone will say the white candidate was the one that they want to choose. Not because they are openly racist mm-hmm. or looking consciously at skin color, but because the 9 did not feel safe in how they showed up in the interview to do that direct eye contact mm-hmm. you were talking about, the hearty handshake, peppering the interviewer with questions. Because when we don't feel safe, we show up like you did on the train, right? Our body language says it all.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to look authority in the eye. We know what happens or has happened in past times when we did that. We knew the cost of it. And so these are the things I want more of us to be talking about. It's not just about the numbers that we count. How many candidates? Sure, 9 out of 10 is great.
Right.
But do we understand what's actually happening when those 9 people come in the room mm-hmm. and how they show up? Because they are on that scale. And that scale, if you are a 9 or a 10 versus a 3 or a 5, it's going to have a different effect on the takeaway.
Mm-hmm. You have an energy. People know.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me wish that I could talk to every person walking into an interview and go, act like you're an 8. You know,
yes.
At least like you're an 8. And what's the difference? You know, it's a tough but really important experiment that you can play with to go, okay, this is me here and this is me there,
yeah.
Right? It's like all of those little things that you realize about yourself that I think contribute to this, that contribute to the idea of what's in your life brief, because what do you believe you deserve? And those are two very different things. We can all put some imaginary life together that we don't connect to because we don't think that we deserve that life, whatever it is. And we can also then say, what would it feel like to actually embody this truth of what I'm putting in this life brief and show up with that?
And when you get clear, really clear, and so the book invites a certain kind of clarity, mm-hmm. right? Because when we write down, that's the exercise here, write down your declaration of what you want. And a declaration because only you know when you have your life brief, when you've written it and it's finished, because it gives you this feeling when you read it back to yourself.
Yeah.
I'm ready for this. I choose this. So that present language and writing a sentence that is so declarative that you might put an exclamation mark on the end of it, and then it's in your bones. It's tattooed in your heart. So automatically it shifts how you show up. So it's almost like having the number 8. But that might be your life brief.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to always show up as an 8 or higher. I'm ready to be an 8 or higher.
Ooh, so even that could be it.
Yeah.
That's the declaration. Interesting. So tell me about the steps or the phases, because you talk about get messy, get clear, get active. So pre-declaration, what happens in the get messy phase?
Well, I find that when I ask the question, what do you want? What do you really, really want? A lot of people just are terrified. They're like, I don't know. My mind just went blank. Or it's a dangerous and forbidden question for a lot of people. And there's a lot of unpacking there, you know. Either my parents told me never to ask that question. It will always lead to disappointment. Or as an Asian woman, society comes first, family comes next. As a woman, I'm last. Don't ask that question. I know women of all shapes and sizes who have some story as to why they are not allowed to ask that question. So the first part is about getting messy. And so if that question isn't unlocking for you, there's so many prompts and penetrating questions to help dig underneath, to peel back the layers so that you can get to your answers. But a lot of other stuff is going to come up. The distractions, the drama, the circumstantial stuff, the looping stories in your head that might be standing in your way. So getting messy is getting it all up and out of yourself so that you can have it in front of you in writing. Because when it's in writing, we create emotional distance. When it's in our head, there's only so much space and we're going to repeat the same stories again and again. When we put it out in writing, now we can look at it with curiosity. And we have more space in our minds for new ideas, new epiphanies, new stories. And when you have all that mess laid out, now you can sort it and zero in on the most sacred, non-negotiable stuff in your life. And that's the clay that begins the next phase, which is getting clear. And that's the art of strategy and distillation, zeroing in on the stuff that matters most and then crafting that into that yes declaration. And once you have that declaration, and it's supposed to be brief, 5 declarative sentences, which you can write and push again and again and again to make it bolder, more honest, more vivid, more evocative. But you got to get the essence down first before you can push it farther. But that's it, because it's called a brief. It's meant to be brief, clear, and concise, but inspiring, motivating, action driving. And part 3 is getting active, which becomes automatic, because once you get yourself to that point, you start to see your days differently. You start to see the way you spend your time. You start to see how you can make different choices, and you're fired up, whether it's goosebumps on your arms or fire in your belly or nausea. But then action almost becomes automatic, and it doesn't have to be big leaps, but it's an invitation to everyone else, a demonstration to yourself that you're ready to shift and show up differently in the tiniest of ways, but consistently, continuously. And then everyone's like, what's happening? What's she drinking? I want that. Because there's an energizing effect to it. But you don't have to quit your job, divorce your spouse, put your pet up for adoption.
Cut off all your hair and disappear.
Exactly. Yeah. You can.
Sure.
You can.
Right.
And then I want to emphasize that in this culture that we work in and live in, this hustle culture, go big or go home, sometimes the boldest thing we can do is to slow down and pause.
Amen to that. That is one of the hardest things to do. You and I both have lived in larger cities where things move really fast. And when I've considered where I wanted to live, I've always wanted to live in New York. But this is a different kind of fast, right? So when you're in a really fast environment, it becomes really natural to become part of that culture. And for us, you know, when it comes to work, it's productivity. How quickly are you moving to get things done? And you're measured on productivity, and people decide your value a lot of times in the workplace based on how productive you are. And the question is, you know, if everybody in your city or where you live or in your company culture or in your home is going at 130 miles an hour, are you willing to be the person brave enough to go at 100? And I love that you brought that up, because I think it's an act of bravery and not an act of laziness or a show that you are not productive enough or you are not smart enough to be in the environment that you're in. I think everybody wants to slow down and no one knows how to. And so the first person to do it always feels like the crazy one. And then everyone else goes, I want what you're having.
It is hard. It's a challenge. And that's why that first part is full of questions, right? When we look at our lives and our habits and our patterns with curiosity, we get to notice, where am I holding myself back? Where am I spreading myself thin? Where am I saying yes when I should be saying no? Because we also have a contribution to this. And then that allows us to look at, well, what are the external forces that are happening? And am I giving in to those external forces? Do I have to? And that's why the question of what matters most here. As a leader, I can get caught in the trap of thinking that I'm indispensable and I need to be at every meeting. Mm-hmm. But then I started to notice, when am I buying into this hero's effect? I actually don't need to be there, but it feels good to be the most powerful or highest ranking person in the room where everybody turns to you, right? But what would happen if I wasn't in the room? Who would I empower when I stay out of the room? So I had to really, over time and in different chapters, reevaluate, what is my ego wanting to be a part of this? Where am I creating extra work? And actually, what is essential to me doing a great job? And whenever I ask that, I can see all the ways I can strip things back and actually become a better leader. And I can ask for help. That was a huge block, is I thought I had to do everything myself. Mm-hmm. But when I started raising people up, elevating them, giving them bigger responsibilities, and then asking more of them without necessarily creating that, again, demand hustle culture. You have to know people and how much they can take. But there were ways that they wanted to be more empowered that I was holding back.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be the hero.
Yeah, it's like, how can they shine for themselves and thus shine for you? I want to ask on the equity and for people of color, for women, for anyone who's been in a marginalized community, I think this can be hard to accept that we are allowed to make a life brief of any kind. Mm-hmm. I think we all have examples that we can go to and go, okay, if this person did it, I can. But oftentimes that feels really far away. What are the things that you think specifically are important for people who are coming from marginalized communities and communities maybe where people around them are saying, you're not allowed to do that. That's not a thing. What should they do differently?
It's what keeps us marginalized. Frankly, if we keep holding that story, that this is a practice of privilege. It's not for me. I'm not allowed. That's what's going to keep us down. And that's the way people like it. Mm-hmm. That's the way the system likes it. This is the practice that is going to get you to 8 in every one of your relationships. Mm. It's a private practice. So you're not blasting it on billboards. You're not telling all your coworkers that this is your brief. But until you can be honest with yourself and clear with yourself that you want this, that you want to be seen, you want people to know your name, you want the credit that you are due. Until you can say that to yourself, it will not be within your reach.
Ooh, and that's it. That gave me the chills. As you have started to put this out in the world, you said earlier that you noticed that it's no longer yours, it's theirs. It's the people who are starting to receive this. What has surprised you about the reaction to this life brief?
It surprised me how many ages and stages of people that it speaks to. I have empty nesters, you know, I have people in the middle of the country who have resonated with it. I have people just out of college. So I realize it doesn't favor a demographic. You don't have to be in a certain life stage or age or a type, but there is a mindset. I think it's for people who are growth oriented, who are seeking alternative ways to relate to themselves. They are open-minded, dare I say open-hearted, they're seekers. If you feel you're the expert, you know enough, need anything.
Yeah.
It's funny, this joke never lands, so I'm going to try
it
one more time. People are always like, I'm not into self-help. I think, yeah, who would want to help themselves?
That lands for me.
And why would you not be into self-help? Yeah. You want to be catered to? It's for people who believe there's a better way.
I'm taking that joke. I'm going to attribute it to you, but I think it's great.
Thank God for you, Leah.
Well, I'm like, it's, yeah, self-help, personal development, whatever you call it. It's who would want to be a better version of themselves?
No,
you're so
yeah.
right.
That says more about that person
Correct.
Than about me or the book.
Or the aisle at Barnes & Noble. Okay, I'm going to have you complete these three statements for me. Better humans are?
Open.
Better work is?
Equitable.
A better world has?
More creative solutions.
Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Thank you,
Leah.
This was
great.
It was so much fun.
That was Bonnie Wan, author of The Life Brief, a playbook for no regrets living. One big thing before we go. I hope that Bonnie and I are leaving you with a clear version of what you want in some area. Now, the question I will leave you with that I love is Bonnie's. What is one irresistibly tiny, unignorable thing you can do tomorrow to get you closer to your brief's goal? Focus on one tiny action you can take every single day and notice the progress you can make in a month, a quarter, or a year. If this conversation resonated with you, share it with the first person who comes to mind. You never know how it could help them. And support other people like you in finding our show. And as always, you can get me in your inbox by signing up for our weekly self-improvement newsletter, giving you practical tips on how to level up with small steps every day. Find it at linkedin.com/everydaybetter. That's linkedin.com/everydaybetter. Everyday Better is a production of LinkedIn News. The show is produced by Alexis Ramdow. Our associate producer is Grace Rubin. Asaf Gujron is our sound engineer. He makes sure we sound good in the studio. Joe DiGiorgi mixed our show. Enrique Montalvo is the executive producer of LinkedIn Editorial Productions. Dave Pond is head of news production. Courtney Koop is head of LinkedIn Original Audio and Video. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. And I'm Leah Smart. Thanks for coming with me, and I'll see you next week.